Welcome to Haunted Canada. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 2 of Haunted Canada. If you have returned, then I can assume that you're enjoying my new podcast, and you've probably already listened to the introduction and episode 1, where we talk about three of Alberta's creepiest ghost stories. And if not, I encourage you to go back and listen to them as well. I only launched this podcast about a week ago, and I have been so pleasantly surprised by the amount of positive responses, emails, Instagram messages, and the amount of followers that I've gotten so far. I truly, truly appreciate it. And with each episode, we're going to continue to talk about more of ghost stories from across Canada, while also delving into true crimes and my personal favorite, cold cases, as well. On episode 2, you're going to hear three more creepy ghost stories from Alberta, from Edmonton, Lethbridge, and Calgary. And then on future episodes, I will cover more ghost stories from across Canada. Please be advised that some of the stories that we talk about on Haunted Canada can deal with adult themes and content of a violent and disturbing nature. Listener discretion is advised. I wanted to tell you about Walter, a friendly ghost that is still roaming around the Walterdale Playhouse in Old Strathcona, Edmonton, Alberta. I actually start my walking tour, the Edmonton Ghost Tours, directly next to this beautiful, historic, and haunted red brick building. This is another ghost story that I was the first person to unearth, research, and write about many, many years ago. In Old Strathcona, Edmonton, Alberta, is the very historic and haunted Walterdale Playhouse, one of Western Canada's oldest amateur theatre groups. It was the first volunteer fire hall built in Strathcona in 1901, and today it has its own ghostly member, known as Walter, the spirit of a former fireman that worked, volunteered, and died in the second floor bunkhouse, which today is the makeup room and dressing room for all the actors. The theatrical building has produced many wonderful performances over the years, yet it is the ghost of Walter that has been seen wandering the hallways and hiding props that always causes the most excitement for local audiences. In the early 1890s, the small area of Strathcona, situated on the banks of the North Saskatchewan River, was bustling with men and women passing through town on their way up north to the Klondike Gold Rush. Since the Edmonton and Calgary Railway line ended in Strathcona, it was the last spot for thousands of people caught up in Gold Rush fever to buy any and all supplies needed for the long and dangerous trek up north. This massive influx of people created a population and economic boom in Strathcona. The small town saw the rapid and haphazardly building of many wooden businesses and homes as numerous entrepreneurs wanted to cash in on Klondike fever. The majority of these wooden storefront buildings were erected on White Avenue and were built so quickly and close together that the need for a fire hall was quickly realized, as it would only take one fire to cause the entire wooden town to burn to the ground. This was a real fear, as similar fires had already destroyed other cities, including Vancouver's Great Fire of 1886, the Great Fire in St. John's, Newfoundland in 1892, and Toronto's Great Fires of 1849 and 1904, just to name a few. Strathcona built its first fire hall in 1901, a two-door wood-frame structure, which was quickly replaced with a more modern three-door brick building in 1910. The red brick building is a great example of a fire hall built pre-World War I and only cost $15,000 at the time. The fire hall was described as unusually commodious by a local writer of the day. And yes, I had to look up the word commodious. It means roomy and comfortable. On the main floor were stables that housed 9 horses and 3 wagons. The second floor had a fire chief's room, 5 additional bedrooms for the volunteers, a band room, and a general room. Like most fire halls built in the early 1900s, the Walterdale had to rely on horses to pull the fire wagons to their destinations. And it seems that the horses that worked and lived on the main floor of the fire hall, well, they were very efficient at their job, for all it would take would be the mere ringing of the emergency bell from the bell tower that's still attached around back, and the horses, upon hearing that bell, would automatically just leave their stalls from inside the building, taking their places directly in front of the fire wagons to be ready to work. And it does seem that those horses may have remained behind in death in case they are needed. It has been told me by many actors and staff that when they're inside the building, that they can often hear the sounds of a ringing bell. Staff can then hear the sounds of a horse's neighing and the sounds of the horse's hooves just clip-clopping along the cement floor. Staff believe to this day that it is still those horses taking their places, getting ready to work, even into eternity. Over the years, when I'm leading the Edmonton Ghost Tours, many strange and smelly things have happened to me and my tour groups when we're standing directly in front of the playhouse. On numerous occasions when I'm telling the tour groups about the building's history, I'll suddenly get an overwhelming smell of hay, horses, and manure, like I'm standing in a barn or a horse's stable. I have often thought that I was the only person smelling this, until numerous people eventually began to come forward on my tours and tell me that they were smelling the exact same thing. I remember one evening in particular, just a few years ago, while I was standing in front of the theater with a group of Pathfinders and Girl Guides. I began to talk about the building's history, and once again, I began to smell horses and hay all around me. As I continued on with the ghost story, a young girl on the tour, around age 9, turned to her mom and said, "I can smell horses, Mom. Can you?" The second floor of the playhouse, which was once a bunkhouse for the volunteer firemen, is now the makeup room and dressing room for all the actors. Yet it's upstairs in that makeup room today where the majority of the strangest things do happen. Actors have told me over the years that when they're upstairs in that room, sitting at their makeup tables, getting ready for their shows, that their large cases containing all their theatrical makeup, that those large cases will suddenly just slide from one side of the counter all the way down to the other end of the room for no apparent reason. While on other occasions, costumes, props, and personal items have mysteriously gone missing from that room, only to reappear just a few moments later in a completely different area of the theater. Several years ago, a friend of mine was performing in a show at the Playhouse in which she had to wear a platinum blonde wig for the performance. It was opening night, and she was sitting upstairs in the makeup room, running lines and getting ready for the show. Her platinum blonde wig was directly in front of her on her makeup table all afternoon. 1 hour before showtime, she told me that she stood up, turned around, got into her costume. But when she turned back around to grab for that wig, it suddenly now had just vanished. Where it went, nobody knew. With only 1 hour to showtime, a frantic search began within the theater. Actors and staff, they searched in every nook and cranny. However, the wig was eventually discovered 5 minutes before showtime down on center stage. How it got there, to this day, still nobody knows. On other occasions, actors and volunteers have passed a mysterious person in the stairwell, but when they turn around, the person has vanished. A few years ago, a woman was leaving a rehearsal at the theater when she stopped to talk to me after one of my tours. With great excitement, she said that she had a few of her own ghost stories from inside the Walterdale Theater and that she wanted to share them with me. She said that when she was performing in a new show, she had to arrive early one evening for a costume fitting. As she climbed the stairs to the second floor makeup room, she said that she noticed an older man dressed in a black suit pass her on the staircase. The man never looked at her and only continued walking down the stairs. She told me that she only climbed about 2 steps and then looked back down the staircase, but that the man had now vanished. She had not heard the door close or open, and she was adamant that there was no way that the man could have made it down those stairs that fast. When the local actress arrived in the costume room just seconds later, she asked the employee, "Who is the man that just left?" The employee replied, "What are you talking about? There's no one else here. You're the first person to arrive." With that, of course, the actress told the employee about the man that she had just seen passing her in the staircase in the black suit. And the employee just threw their head back in laughter and said, "Ah, that's just Walter. He's always wandering around here." She then went on to tell me of another creepy experience that she and 2 fellow actors experienced at the end of a rehearsal one evening. The group all helped put away the few props that they had been using that evening, which consisted of 3 chairs, a side table, and a lamp. Each person took a prop from the stage and placed them all together backstage for storage. The lights were shut off, and the group left the theater and went upstairs to grab their coats and jackets. A few minutes later, she said that the group was coming down the staircase when they all noticed that the hall lights were on again. Not thinking much of it, the group went around the corner to turn off the lights, only to notice that the lights in the theater were now back on. When the group opened the door to the theater, she said that they were all left speechless. The prop items, the 3 chairs, the side table, and the lamp that had all been put away just minutes earlier were all now back on stage in the exact same spots. The actress told me that everybody just stood there in complete silence for a few moments. No words were exchanged as they closed the door to the theater and exited the building. To this day, everyone at the Walterdale Theater believes that it is Walter, the volunteer fireman who died in the second floor bunkhouse, that it is still his spirit that is seen wandering throughout his old fire hall still to this day. In the beautiful town of Lethbridge, Alberta, lies the Galt Museum that originally was the hospital built in 1910. One of the museum's ghostly residents is George, a patient who died tragically at the Galt Hospital in 1933 while being wheeled into the operating room for a routine appendectomy. Still groggy from the anesthesia, George was only pushed halfway into the elevator when the elevator and the elevator doors malfunctioned, and George only halfway in the elevator began to rise. The front legs of the gurney got caught on the elevator door, dangling the gurney and George just above the open elevator shaft. Moments later, George fell from the gurney, plummeting to the bottom of the elevator shaft, landing on his head on that basement floor. Unbelievably, George did not die from the fall, but was found mere moments later, upright, shuffling around, and laughing in the basement area. Yet sadly, George did die of head injuries the very next day. Since then, reports of George's presence has been felt and documented by numerous staff and visitors to the museum over the years. Staff have reported that when they're in the building working, that they often can hear the sounds of shuffling feet. They can also hear somebody whistling and blasts of cold air all around them. On other occasions, the figure of a young woman dressed in a crisp white nurse's uniform wearing an old-fashioned nurse's hat can often be spotted wandering throughout the hallways. Yet some of the most spine-chilling stories come from the upper level of the museum that originally was the old children's ward and nursery of the Galt Hospital. Many patrons and visitors of the haunted museum have reported that when they're working on that particular area, that they often get an uneasy sense as if they're being watched, or as if someone or something is pulling at the corner of their jacket. Yet when they look around, there's nobody else in the room with them. While others have spoken of reading and working quietly on the upper levels of the old hospital, only to hear the infectious giggling and chatter of children seemingly all around them. One man in particular was studying late one evening on the upper level of the museum, the old children's ward, but had an uneasy feeling the entire time, sensing as if he was being watched. While at other times, items that were right next to him on the table, such as his reading glasses, notebooks, and pens, would mysteriously disappear, only to be found mere moments later at the other end of the room. When this man left the museum at the end of the day and was walking to the parking lot, he felt an irresistible urge to turn around. As he did, he looked up and spotted a young girl waving goodbye to him in the window of the very room that he had just left, the old children's ward of the Galt Hospital. This next story does talk about the death of a young child and contains content of a violent and disturbing nature. Listener discretion is advised. Alberta is a growing city known for its oil prosperity, ever-expanding housing market, and breathtaking views of the majestic Rocky Mountains. Yet in 1946, the city was the site of the horrific murder of six-year-old Donnie Goss on St. George's Island, directly beneath the Zoo Bridge. And to this day, It is still believed that Donnie's spirit is seen and heard in the very area where he so tragically died so many years ago. If you're not familiar with Calgary, it does have an amazing zoo in the center of the city, connected to St. George's Island. The island was actually named after one of the patron saints of the United Kingdom, St. George of England. This collection of small islands that were merged together many years ago on the Bow River has always served many purposes, such as a community space, a festival area, a park where families would go to spend time together, picnic, walk, and play. A place where Donnie and the rest of the Goss family had gone many times. Donald Henry Goss, but everyone called him Donnie, was born in Calgary on November 7th, 1939, and he had just finished grade one at Bridgeland Cottage School. He was actually a twin to his sister Doreen and had two brothers, one older and one younger. Donnie was growing up in the 1940s, a simpler and what many people believe to be a safer time where everyone knew everyone. In 1946, Calgary was a much smaller city than it is today. It was a place where you knew your neighbors, and kids had more freedom. Kids could just go outside and play. They could just be kids. And that is exactly what Donnie, his brother, and a friend did on the evening of Wednesday, July 24th, 1946. At 6:30 p.m., just after dinner, on that warm summer evening, the three boys set out to walk to the nearby park on St. George's Island. But unbeknownst to anyone at the time, a suspected child murderer, Donald Sherman Stanley, was in that very park looking for his next victim. Donald Stanley had traveled to Calgary from Vancouver, British Columbia, where he was already under investigation and would later confess to the murder of another young boy, 11-year-old Gary Billings. On that Wednesday evening, there were many people in the park. Families were out walking and kids were playing. So when the three boys got to the park, Kenneth and his friend went off to play baseball nearby, and Donnie went to the park to play on the smaller swings. When Kenneth finished playing baseball, he returned to the swings to get his younger brother. But Donnie was nowhere to be found. Assuming that Donnie had just gone home, it wasn't until Kenneth arrived home a little while later that he realized that Donnie wasn't there. Kenneth quickly alerted his family, and then he and an uncle went back to the park to look for Donnie, with more friends and family arriving shortly thereafter. Donnie's father, Henry Goss, upon being notified that his son was missing, left his job to search for his son also, with many of his co-workers from the railway coming to help in the search as well. Everyone searched St. George's Island throughout the evening, calling out little Donnie's name all night. By sunrise the next morning, Donnie still had not been found. So the police and the park employees began another search of the area. And then in the afternoon, the RCMP brought in a search dog, but that produced no results. The St. John's Ambulance organized another search when, almost 24 hours after he was last seen, the lifeless and brutalized body of little Donnie Goss was found hidden underneath some deep bushes, directly beneath the zoo bridge. Just 24 hours earlier, Stanley had set his sights on innocent little Donnie Goss, luring him away from the park and dragging the young boy into the deep bushes where he stabbed, assaulted, and murdered the 6-year-old. Stanley then tried to cover up the crime by hiding the young child's body under some branches and bushes. It was such a horrific crime that it shocked the entire city, province, and country. The Calgary Herald stated, "The brutal and sadistic slaying created a state of near panic in Calgary and Vancouver homes as police sought the killer." When Donnie's body was discovered, the tragic news traveled quickly in Calgary, with many friends, neighbors, and heartbroken Calgarians showing up at the Goss home to offer support. The police were able to gather a description of the killer. Donnie's brother, Kenneth, described the man that he had seen as being an older man, 5 feet, 6 inches tall, skinny, and he looked mean. Kenneth also said that the man was wearing a brown jacket with a patch high upon the shoulder, black pants, and a white stripe, and that the clothes looked like they were old and dirty. Kenneth also told the police that the old man that he had just described had been watching them and walked towards the Island store when Donnie went to the swings. While the city of Calgary was on edge and mourning the loss of Donnie, the killer was not identified until almost 1 month later. Stanley was arrested in Calgary for breaking into and stealing items from the Diamond Cafe. It was while in jail for a completely separate crime that Stanley was interviewed about the killing of the 11-year-old Gary Billings in Vancouver Stanley Park. He confessed to that crime and also confessed to the brutal killing of 6-year-old Donnie Goss. When news broke across Calgary and the country that the child killer Stanley had been caught, a sense of relief spread. Donald Sherman Stanley, 29, was tried, found guilty, and sentenced to hang for the murder of 6-year-old Donnie Goss, while also having confessed to the brutal murder of 11-year-old Gary Billings in Vancouver's Stanley Park. Stanley was hanged on December 18, 1946, along with 4 German prisoners of war at the Lethbridge Provincial Gallows in Lethbridge, Alberta. It was the largest public execution in Canadian history. Yet to this day, visitors of St. George's Island, which is part of the Calgary Zoo grounds, believe that the spirit of Donnie Goss is still seen and heard on the very island and underneath the zoo bridge. Over the years, strange events have been reported in that very area as pedestrians can often hear a young boy's voice crying out for help. While a new zoo bridge was built and opened in 2017 to replace the previous 1908 structure, people still report that when they're walking or biking along the river paths, over the zoo bridge or in and about St. George's Island area, especially at night, that they can often hear the cries of a small child calling out for help. On many occasions, upon hearing these cries for help, local police have been called to the bridge area. Searches have begun, but no child is ever found. Today, a maintenance building now sits on the very site where the park used to be. Over the years, security staff at the Calgary Zoo have had many strange and creepy experiences in and around that building. Working in that building late at night, employees would often report hearing a small knock at the door of the building. Yet when staff open that door, there's nobody ever there. The door opens onto a parking lot, so when staff would open that door to check, no one was ever seen in the area or in the parking lot. Staff, knowing that a young boy had been murdered in the area, believed that the visitor to the door was that of little Donnie Goss. One security guard believed that the spirit of the little boy just wanted to play. So the security guard would often toss a child's ball outside for Donnie to play with. The ball would be tossed into the parking lot and would land at the edge of the parking lot by the grass and the trees. Whenever the employee did this, the ball would mysteriously reappear at the step of the security door later on that same evening. But perhaps even more hair-raising is the many encounters that other small children have reported in that very area. Over the years, when families are in that area walking and exploring with their own children, they've often reported that their young kids have often spoken of talking and playing with a young boy named Donnie. On one particular summer evening, a family was out for a stroll along the walkways by the zoo bridge. The young girl, age 7, was collecting some wildflowers along the pathway when her parents noticed that she seemed to be giggling and talking to somebody, yet there was nobody around her in the grassy area. When the parents told the young girl that it was time to head home, the young girl didn't want to leave and protested. When the mother asked the little girl why she didn't want to go home, the young girl just replied that she wanted to stay and play with her new friend, Donnie. The mom was a bit confused as she saw no other kids in sight. Realizing that there were clearly no other kids in the area or by them on the walking trail, the mother knelt down on the grass so that she was eye level to her daughter and asked her, "Where was this boy?" The young girl pointed right next to her mother, saying, "He's right there, Mommy, standing right next to you." Many similar stories of people seeing and hearing a young boy by the zoo bridge have been recounted over the years, and it is still believed to be the ghost of little Donnie Goss, whose spirit still roams around the zoo bridge, the very area where he was so tragically murdered in 1946. Thank you to everyone for listening to Haunted Canada. If you have enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please subscribe to the podcast, like, share, and tell a friend about it. Also, please take the time to write a positive review and leave a 5-star review as well, as that helps others find us on iTunes, Spotify, and all those other sites as well. So please leave a review, as it does help. If you have your own ghost story, true crime, or cold case, or something that you'd like for us to cover on Haunted Canada, please visit us and email us through our website at hauntedcanada.com, where you can also link and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And if you're ever in Edmonton, Alberta, and you'd like to go on one of my award-winning ghost tours, please check us out at edmontonghosttours.com. Absolutely a big thank you to every single person who took the time to download this podcast. I have been completely surprised but so appreciative of the amount of support and the encouragement that I have been receiving, and I really want to thank every single person. I truly, truly do appreciate it. So stay tuned for the next podcast, where again we're going to deal with some creepy stories from across Canada, and where we're also going to delve into an unsolved murder, a cold case. And this first cold case that I'm going to cover happened right here in Alberta. I also had an email this week from a subscriber, and they were interested to know in what kind of podcasts I listen to and that I would recommend. Some of my favorite podcasts that I listen to on a daily basis is Canadian True Crime. I absolutely love this podcast. I love Serial, Dark Poutine, great for ghost stories. I also love Crime Beat, Up and Vanished, And for outside of the true crime and ghost story genre, one of my other favorite podcasts is Under the Influence by Terry O'Reilly. I absolutely love that podcast, so try to give it a listen if you can. Again, thank you to everyone for subscribing and for supporting Haunted Canada. And stay tuned because the next episode will be out next week.